Hello and welcome to Every Woman. I'm Fiona Nalling and I'm here in the studio with my co-host Anthony.
Hello.
And my wife Una.
Hello. She's... Look, I have a microphone today. That's yes. Unusual.
Yeah.
Yes, we didn't have to steal a microphone from the engineer.
Both sound engineer and professional licensed engineer.
I'm also a professor of engineering. I mean, you don't want to leave that out.
You're right. You're engineer cubed, not squared.
Although I'm between semesters now, which means I get to, I don't get to date my students, but I get to have meaningful coffee with them.
I'm going to leave that alone, not even going to touch it with a barge pole.
Yeah, I think the folks at UMKC are now starting to fill out paperwork about me. But anyways.
Yeah, and I tend to only drink tea anyway.
Yeah, well, they...
Not meaningful coffee.
If they don't know my deadpan humor by now, then Merry Christmas to them.
So, before we got sidetracked about meaningful engineering coffee, I was going to say that we have a guest in the studio today, Alison Hartnett, who's from Microsoft Philanthropies Teals. They just updated the name recently. And after I kept saying more two last week instead of more squared, I wanted to make sure I got it correct today. That's an organization that focuses on getting computers and computer science into schools K through 12 so that computer science can just be part of the curriculum and start out really early and support people all the way through their school career and on into university instead of being something that's presented as strange or weird or hard or technologically challenging because it's new as a later higher subject. And over the past year we've had several guests on who've been from organizations helping to get more women into computing and into technological careers because that greatly accelerates women's pay scales and salaries and the respect that they have in the community, so they carry more weight. And
it is an industry that, although it does have some level of, you know, the inherent misogyny in it that many of them do, it seems to be less prevalent than some of the others.
And some of it varies by city. When they've done reports, Kansas City is one of the top cities in the country for women in technology. And when they compared pay scales for women against pay scales for men, in Kansas City it was at parity or occasionally like 101% of the salary of males women were getting.
Now, Kansas City has always been at the forefront of equity throughout its history, and that's just another example. I mean, and you also talked on one past episode this year about the programmer culture, and so to speak.
Yes.
You know, write a new function, chest bump your neighbor in the cubicle next to you or something, or whatever they do. Scratch yourself with your car keys.
Okay, before Una gets too sexist, I think we'll throw the floor over to our guest.
I don't think I can be any more sexist.
So, welcome to Every Woman, Alison.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
So, before we start talking about Teals, could we talk about your life and what got you interested in the Teals program and how you came to be here today?
Definitely. So, my background is actually in physics and math. I have a PhD in physics and math, actually from UMKC.
Oh, wow.
And afterwards, I taught at the university level. I taught at UMKC. I taught at Rockhurst University. I taught at Kansas City, Kansas Community College. And I did a lot of different things, but one of the things that I did was I would bring high school students on campus, and we do, like, immersion math programs or immersion engineering programs where we expose students to the college campus, and we expose students to various career paths, and, you know, the idea was to build excitement and to build a pathway and an idea of, you know, maybe this could be your next step. And then I took a break. You know, I'm a female, so I took a break because I had a daughter, you know, which very many women do. And so my daughter is now six, and so last year I was looking and saying, well, what sort of things do I want to do? I loved making an impact. I still love teaching, but I found Teals, and I thought, well, this is a great way. So now I'm not working with a group of, say, like 30 or 40 students that are coming up to campus on the summer, but now I can work with hundreds of students and make an impact there. So that was my journey.
So the students that you were having coming to campus, was that co-ed groups?
It was co-ed groups. You know, it was oftentimes, it was usually teacher selected. So for our engineering programs, it was students who are already in an engineering class that our teachers saw potential, not necessarily great grades, not necessarily stellar attendance, but that they saw some sort of potential. And the idea was to show them that there was something greater than, you know, their normal high school experience.
Yeah, I could imagine that the people who don't have the stellar grades and the stellar attendance, they're the very ones that you want to reach out to and get them excited about something.
Exactly.
The people that are making straight A's and flying through everything and everyone expects great things of, they're the people that don't really need opportunities like that.
Exactly. And, you know, this was with Kansas City, Kansas School District, and, you know, inner city school, great students, wonderful, wonderful kids. But, yeah, the one thing I'm proud of is that we didn't always pick the straight A kids. We picked the kids that maybe weren't straight A's, but, you know, showed an interest or an aptitude, and see what we could do with that.
I think that's a wonderful approach to take. I taught high school science for 2 years myself, and it always hurt my heart. Some kids would try so, so hard and not get it. And my heart would always hurt for those kids. The kids that weren't trying, it's like, especially the kids that, if they tried, they really could do it. My heart didn't ache for them, but the kids that really tried hard, I thought they were going to get looked over and ignored by everyone, but they were really trying hard. And there's not always a way to support people like that in the standard classroom environment.
No, there isn't. It's hard.
So does TEALS have programs for students, or are they working with the school district? What exactly does TEALS do?
Excellent. So TEALS works on the philosophy that every high school should have a rigorous computer science program. And so our goal is to try and help high schools do that. And the way that we do that is, one of the things that we recognize is that there's a drastic shortage of computer science teachers. Because if you have a degree in computer science, or if you have aptitude to computer science, the last thing that you're going to do, you know, not one of the last things you're going to do is be in a high school classroom, because in industry you can make so much more. And so the way that our model works is, we take volunteers and we bring them into the classroom to help teach computer science, with the plan that eventually our classroom teacher will be able to teach it themselves. And so we have, you know, and I have to point out that we have volunteers all across the nation. You know, I think we're looking at about 1,500 volunteers this year. And these folks put in hours to help bring, you know, students computer science. They some of them will teach the entire course. In other words, they are doing the lesson plans, they are doing the preps, they're doing the gradings. In addition, they're supporting their classroom teacher, who, you know, explaining to them what I'm doing in the classroom. And so the idea is that our volunteers come in the classroom, they help teach computer science. Eventually, our classroom teacher can pick the concepts up and will teach it themselves.
Yeah. Is there a move to have people who want to become teachers to have them take a course on how to teach computer science?
There are right. And so, you know, each state is a little bit different, and Kansas and Missouri are in the process of creating their standards for that. And so, but most states end up having something along the lines that if you are, say, a science teacher, if you're even a social studies teacher and you want to teach computer science, these are the steps that you need to do. And oftentimes they're tests, sometimes they're classes, but usually what we would do is have it so that that teacher can do that professional development in addition to having that TEALS support.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of, because at least in my schools, all the teachers could teach anything. They had general teaching degrees, and they were often moved to different subjects each year. So whenever individuals go to college and say, I want to be a teacher, are the colleges offering them, here's computer science, how to teach
as a possibility to teach? You know, not that many. In the state of Missouri, the only place that I know that offers computer science education is Southwest Baptist. You know, there are a few programs in between. They're slowly growing, but they're not as strong as they are. And so we're not turning out teachers at the moment. We hope to in the future. But at the moment, we just don't have that infrastructure in place.
So we've got a mechanism in place for doing a bolt-on of computer science once they've got a basis in something else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's K through 12, I saw on the website. So how do you get involved and show them computers at the K grades?
So usually from our volunteers come in through the high school grades. For K through 8, we have a collection of resources that we've procured mostly through Microsoft, and we can refer our partner schools to that. But what we found is that at the high school level is where you're going to need that extra support. So oftentimes, you know, a first grade teacher, there's lesson plans available that the average first grade teacher can go and incorporate computer science in their daily lesson plan. And I do hope that, you know, I know that there are teachers who are doing that, and I hope that there are more. But then what we found out is once you get into the high school level, the material gets a little bit more difficult. It's a lot harder for that average person to just pick up. And so that's where our support is.
At least in my experience in school, whenever we went to the library, that was where we were taught computer skills in elementary school. But as soon as I went to middle school, it just disappeared.
Right. And I'll point out there's a difference between computer skills, which is like oftentimes keyboarding, and computer science, which is a slightly more rigorous, you know, understanding on making sure that, that computational thinking on getting a computer to work. But you're right. Mm-hmm. Very often it drops off around middle school time. Where we want our students to be proficient, but we're not necessarily there.
So K through 7-ish is mostly provided for. So when you start with this high school level, how are you providing the support? Are you having to actually provide the computers, or do most schools actually have those now, or are you helping with fund drives and advice about what to buy in order to be able to use it for a computer science course?
Sure. So TEALS has several curriculums that we have ourselves, that we've created ourselves, and then we work with a large variety of partner organizations that make curriculum. But most schools will provide their own computer, their own computer lab, and then really textbooks, if that's necessary, depending on where they're looking for any of those sort of sites. What we work mainly is we help provide volunteers, and we help provide that support to make that transition work.
That's great. And we have to take a short station break now, so we'll be right back after that to find out what those volunteers do. And you're back with Every Woman, and we just heard from the Kansas City Women's Network, Women's Music Network, which seems related.
I know. We're going to have some music here at the bottom of the hour, too. We're going to have a couple Christmas tunes to play people in our own special style, of course.
So, speaking of special style, we have volunteers. Mm-hmm. So what do the volunteers bring to the organization, and what's expected of them, and what do they provide to the schools?
Definitely. So our volunteers, usually around the spring is when we start looking for volunteers, and these are tech professionals. Our goal is when we're recruiting for schools, we try and have our volunteers match the demographics of that school. We're not always there. But that is always our goal. And so, but we ask our volunteers to apply through our website. And from that application, they'll go through a brief interview with a TEALS regional manager, which would be myself and one of 40 other people across the nation. And then after that, there'll be summer training. We do about 40 hours of summer training with them. It's about 2 Saturdays and an evening, and then there's also some online coursework also. Before we bring any volunteer in the classroom, we want to make sure that they understand not only the technical information, like, you know, what is a loop in a computer science, but they also understand how to be in a classroom. And we have some discussions about cultural diversity, and we have discussions about, how you can look at for every student and look for those students that are maybe not necessarily active and involved, but how you can draw them out and some of those good techniques in the classroom. So we do some training with our volunteers over the summer, and then and part of that work is working with their classroom teacher. And then the fall, most of our volunteers attend class about twice a week. We try and schedule our classes first period in the morning. So class may be from 7:30 to 8:30, and afterwards our volunteers would arrive fashionably late at work, depending on where they work. And usually that you may not even bat an eye if you're in before 10. What we end up doing is our volunteers not only will be in the classroom, but they may help our classroom teacher with planning the lessons, with grading, especially as you're learning a new material, computer science. When you're looking at student submitted work, oftentimes you need that expert opinion to look at that and say, oh, you know, this is a fundamental misunderstanding here, or this is this person transposing between 3 and 5. You know, some of those things you really need that expert.
Being able to spot where they went off the rails so that you know how to get them back on track again.
Exactly. Some of the things, and you know, that takes practice and that takes time, and a new classroom teacher in computer science, of course, does not have that information and that knowledge. So we ask our volunteers to provide that until they can do that.
Yeah, the old show you're working, because at least then you might get partial credit instead of just writing 42 down at the bottom and getting 0.
Exactly. Always a thing. So
I know some of my friends actually homeschooled their children. Mm-hmm. Do you have any programs available that homeschool communities can reach out to?
You know, my favorite resource, and this is not only for homeschooled but any sort of interested parent, is the first week in December is always Computer Science Education Week, and there's always great announcements that come out. But one of the things that happens is Hour of Code, and the premise is that for 1 hour every week, every child in the world should do 1 hour of code. And if you go to hourofcode.org, there is a large variety of materials, from preschoolers all the way up to high schoolers, where they're designed to be an hour. Some of them require a computer. Some of them are designed to be offline. Some of them are designed to be done in a classroom. Some of them are designed to be individually. And so my high recommendation is that you go to hourofcode.org, have the appropriate kid find one or two things that they like and enjoy, and usually those might be, you know, based off of a particular curriculum, and then you can say, oh, I really like this. This was based off of Lightbot, or this was based off of code.org, and so then I would go to that particular place. But it's a great way to try things and to figure things out, and they're for every age level.
It sounds like that's also a way for possibly adults that may not have been educated in school but are interested in code, or the teenagers themselves that are interested in code, to find materials or more advanced materials.
Exactly. In fact, one of my schools in Stoughton, Wisconsin, they were doing Hour of Code, and they brought in administrators. So they're the class brought in administrators to teach them what they've been learning using Hour of Code materials. So that's what they did during CS Ed Week. So it's a great way to do that. And I was really proud, you know, that those kids were teaching adults. It was fun to hear about. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. But
in your personal experience, have you seen female students be interested in code or in the materials, or what has been the response of the young women in the schools?
So, you know, I think that I have several different schools where computer science is an option, and I have several schools where computer science is a requirement. And so there's differences between that. One of the things that I think people overlook is that women are incredibly creative, smart individuals, and you know, this is true in anything, but computer science is great because that creativity can come out, and that logic is something that you can actually, you know, bring to it. So a lot of the curriculums that we work with are designed to allow that creativity, so that, you know, it might be something along the lines of snowmen, where you try and guess a word and the snowman will slightly come off a little bit. Well, that can be done in any sort of background. That can be done as a fairy tale princess, that can be done as a zombie, and it can be done regardless of whatever that student is interested in, and how the, you know, what they like and what they don't like. And so what I found is that because we have that open-ended ability, a lot of women really love that because they can bring to it their experiences and what they find their truth to be.
That sounds great. I know that I read the stats for the national level, and it said that 33% of the students nationally that are involved in TEALS are female. 34% are minorities, and I'm sure there's an overlap there, and then 10% of the students reached by the program are in rural areas where you would expect them to have poorer access to resources like that. And you told me earlier that there's a statistic that the earlier people get exposed to computer science, the more likely they are to do it in university level.
Yes. So, you know, one of the things that when we try and look at how many computer science classes there are, one of the great ways we can do that is AP. And AP, you know, students can take high school courses and then they can get college credit for it. And one of the great things about this is a, you know, national organization that has a test at the end of the year, so it's unbiased. So, you know, if you take an AP calculus course in Maine and you take an AP calculus course in Minnesota and you get the exact same score, the idea is that you have a similar idea. And so one of the things that the College Board discovered is that students who take an AP computer science course in high school are 4 to 10 times more likely to major in computer science. And the 10 times more likely is women, and the 4 times more likely is white males. And so one of the AP computer science courses that the College Board actually has is Computer Science Principles, and it's specifically designed to bring women and minorities into computer science. And this is a course that has like 6 broad ideas of like the internet and data science and, you know, programming, and students get to do what they call like an explore cast and a create task, where they kind of like, you can like one student like made a clock or something like that. I mean, you can do all sorts of really fun, exciting projects, and it can be language agnostic, but the idea is to bring more women into computer science. And we're not there now. I mean, I think at the last exam, our, you know, like the 2018 College Board exam of computer science, less than a quarter of our exam takers were women, and in Missouri and Kansas, it was even worse. In Missouri, like 14% of the AP computer science course takers were female, and in Kansas it was like 12%. So we have work to do, but we're hoping that, you know, by providing students with an opportunity for computer science. And I will point out that there are lots of other computer science courses that aren't AP. It's just that's the one we can track nationally. So
have you thought about approaching parents with getting their children involved in coding or in the things that they can do in coding other than the hour a week?
So we definitely have thought about it, but really we go back to the premise of TEALS, is that we want every high school to have a rigorous computer science program. And so, you know, our contention is that we don't want computer science to be just an hour a week, you know, an hour once in December, that we want it to be offered for every student. Nationally, we're working on making sure that computer science is something that is recognized as an actual subject, and that, you know, students can get, like, you know, math or science credit for it. And the idea would be is that we really want that to have a rigorous ongoing ability, not necessarily just once. But there are definitely those opportunities. There's stuff like DigiGirls, which is events where, you know, girls will come together, I think it's in the spring, and they do, like, you know, some fun coding activities and that sort of things. I mean, there are those activities, and they are available. It's just not something that TEALS necessarily does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when I was teaching, we had a bus that came around that was specifically aimed for girls in science. So they had, like, cool experiments that they could do, and the boys were stuck in this classroom doing normal lessons, and the girls got to go out and do cool things on the bus to try and help counter any cultural messages that they might have absorbed about science is hard and it's only for boys and things like that. So I assume that the events in spring are aimed at reversing that messaging for girls for computer science too.
Exactly. There are, and you know, TEALS tries to provide some out-of-classroom experience for all of our schools, whether in larger regions, and of course, you know, in the Midwest, we're just starting and getting our footprint in, but in larger regions, they'll do like a computer science fair. So recently, Computer Science for Rhode Island, like 2 weeks ago, did their big computer science fair, and it was really fun to see all of the kids that come in and look at this. I mean, you know, and again, boys and girls, but there's lots of different opportunities, and we at TEALS try and be mindful to have experiences that everybody of all genders and interests will appreciate. Regardless of your background. And so that is something that, you know, we definitely are always culturally aware of, and that, you know, we want to make sure that all of our experiences are opening and welcoming for all of our students.
And I think for that, you said that you try and match the demographics of your volunteers with the demographics of the schools.
Right. Our goal is to match the demographics of our volunteers with the demographics of our schools. And you know, I mean, honestly, we fail at that more than I would like to. But, I mean, if you think about it, 15% nationally of in tech are underrepresented minorities. Well, if we are in an urban school, you know, obviously the majority of our students are underrepresented minorities, and finding those volunteers is difficult. I will say that every single one of our volunteer promotional materials this last year had a picture of a woman on it, with the idea that, you know, we know that a quarter or so women are in tech, you know, proportionately, but we want to have, you know, 50% are in our average high school, you know, and so we want to have those volunteers that match the demographics, and we hope that our promotional materials resound to someone, that they look at this and they say, oh, this is me, I could be a volunteer for TEALS.
Yeah, representation matters both directions, for drawing the volunteers in and making them feel comfortable volunteering with you.
Right.
And for someone, for the females in the school to look up to and say, oh, no, it's not just guys in computing. There's women here too.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you know, if you want a cultural change, you have to do that at all levels. And so, you know, we hope that we draw in volunteers that can represent, you know, being strong women in tech, so that our students, our female students, can see a strong woman in tech and say, I could be that strong woman. And, you know, we're very mindful of that placement.
So what would you say to someone who was considering volunteering with you but was a bit hesitant because they're like, maybe I'm relatively new in computer science, or I don't know every single language, so I can't possibly cover everything?
Well, the great thing is we support a wide range of curriculums. And so, you know, one of the things that I think is really fun about my job is in the springtime, I get to be kind of a matchmaker. And so I can say, well, what languages do you know? And what languages do you like to work with? You know, and what, you know, what is your background? Are you, you know, if you are a hardcore Java programmer, then of course I'm going to put you in a computer science A, which is a Java base. But, you know, if maybe, you know, like one of my volunteers actually has his PhD in robotics. And so he's in computer science principles, which is that broad-based course designed to draw on women and minorities, with the idea being that, you know, he can be kind of a jack of all trades. And he wouldn't necessarily need to know tons of languages because his experience is being there in tech. And so, you know, it really just depends on, you know, who you are and what you're interested in. But please apply, even if you think that you may not have the skills, because I may have this perfect school for you.
That's great. And on that uplifting note, we're going to go to some exciting, uplifting Christmas music, aren't we?
Yes, I thought we would take a short break here at the bottom of the hour, playing Oi to the World by No Doubt, which has the distinction of being the only Christmas song I could find which mentions the word nunchucks. If that hasn't caught your interest, stay tuned, and maybe the song will.
And we're back, and you just heard the only song with the nunchucks, with the Christmas ninjas, which Anthony reliably informed me during the break are officially called elves.
Elves or Christmas ninjas?
I can assure you that there's a movie entirely about Christmas ninjas that are elves.
Okay, do they dress
in... What movie is that?
I don't remember the name of it.
Oh, so you just dangled that out there to tease us and then draw
it back
in.
I just saw a commercial for it. I never watched it.
That's going to have to be an exercise for our listeners, and they'll have to research that if they're curious about the Christmas elf ninja army. But going back to more related research... I know, that was a very bad segue. I was fishing there. Ice fishing, maybe. We were talking a bit about what languages the study covers during the music break, because we had this nasty habit of having interesting topics and keeping talking about them while our listeners don't get to join in. So could you tell us a little bit about what languages it covers? Mm-hmm. Una mentioned, even does it do support for development of apps for phones and for mobile, which a lot of young people would probably relate to a lot more than what might seem like a boring computer mainframe type of system.
Definitely. So we have three main curriculums that we work with. The first one is our intro, and the first semester of that is Snap, which is a block-based programming language, and so it's like drag and drop. If you've heard of Scratch, it's similar to that. And then the second semester of that is Python, which is, you know, kind of a nice, easy text-based language that's great. It's used in data science. It's still used in industry, but at the same time, it's an easy one to learn. And then our second course that we talk about is Computer Science Principles. And remember, that's the AP course that students can get college credit that is designed to bring women and minorities in. And that one is language agnostic. And we work with a variety of different partners on that. And so some of them use Python. A lot of them use some sort of app inventor type thing or designing some sort of app. Some of them will use JavaScript. Some of them will actually use Snaps. You know, it just really depends on what curriculum that is. And then we also support Computer Science A, which is Java. So this would be, it also is an AP course, but this would be very much akin to what you would take as your first major as a computer science major. And so, you know, it is hardcore, you know, it is rigorous, it is hardcore. But of course that, you know, if that is your path, then we want to have that support in. And of course, ideally we would love our schools to have pathways to have all three of those options as time goes on, or some sort of, you know, introduction, computer science principles, computer science A, if it's not necessarily with our curriculum.
So you mentioned we'd like our schools. So how many schools in the area do you have?
So great. So TEALS actually supports about 500 schools nationally, and I'm my job is Central Midwest, and so I have schools in Kansas, Missouri, and then just temporarily in Wisconsin. And so I have 13 schools between all of them. Five of them are within the Kansas City metro area. And so in the Kansas City metro area, I have Crystal Ray. I have Blue Springs, I have Blue Springs South, I have William Chrisman, and then I also have St. Michael's, the Archangel. And so you'll notice that we have suburban schools, we have kind of urban schools, we have hard, you know, center of the city urban schools, Crystal Ray is just a couple blocks from here, and then, of course, we have public and private schools. And so we have a great mix, which is very similar to a lot of our TEALS schools. We, you know, the only thing that's not missing in the Kansas City area is charter schools at the moment, but...
So if any school, if anyone was listening and thinking, this sounds like a really great idea, I'd like to get involved with this for the kids at my school, how would they reach out and become a TEALS school?
That's great. So we take applications through the end of February, and the application takes about 15 minutes online, and I would definitely encourage you, if you're interested, to go ahead and go to our website. There's lots of information. There's actually, one of the great things is there's recurring webinars that are going on at various different times, so you can kind of join in, even if you're not necessarily in an area. But the idea is that you would fill out an application, and then you would have an interview. You'll need to identify a partner teacher, someone who would be interested in working with us and learning computer science. But we have partner teachers who join our program who are experienced and have taught computer science for, you know, the last 20 years, but want that industry connection. And we have, you know, we have partner teachers who are joining us who have never even touched computer science and are anxious and interested in to learn. And so, you know, really what you would need to do is fill out an application, and you're always welcome to look at our website. There's lots more information about the nuts and bolts of that thing, and you know, we don't quite have time to go through all of that sort of stuff.
So I can't remember if you've actually given us the web address already, but refresh your memory if you haven't.
I don't remember, because I remember we were supposed to do it at certain times. So TEALSK12.org, so www.TEALSK12.org.
Great. So after they send things in February, or when things close, that's when you start that matchmaking process?
Right. And I would say that depending on where you are, the demand is higher. And so getting that application in earlier, we have that demand in the, we have acceptance on rolling basis. But yes, and so we do the, like, once you are an accepted school, then the school will work on finding volunteers alongside your TEALS regional manager will help. And then, of course, TEALS nationally will do things like Facebook pushes and, you know, other social media things to help out. And, you know, again, we met at a conference where I was there, and part of the reason I was at that conference, it was an industry conference, it was to find people for next spring, so that, you know, hopefully there's people in the pipeline, so as I'm looking for volunteers in the spring, I won't be scrambling around, and, you know, I have people on my little speed dial who might be interested in being in a classroom.
Now, I know I mentioned earlier that about 10% nationally of schools in the program are in rural areas. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of rural areas don't have a huge tech base to draw for volunteers from. I mean, we've got the tech corridor in Overland Park and things like that, but if you're out in the middle of nowhere, as most people would think of it, how do you get volunteers there? Can they do webinars or anything like that?
We actually have a dedicated rural and distance program, and the idea would be is that our volunteers video conference in, and they will do exactly the same thing our other volunteers do, only they'll do it virtually. We do try and get our volunteers into the classroom, you know, at least once a semester so that you can see a face with that name. What we found is that our rural and distance program, the two school types of schools that really use it are our rural schools in the middle, you know, in the, where there just really isn't a tech base to draw from. And then also in those larger cities where it's sometimes an hour drive to get to a particular school. And the idea would be instead of that, you know, you would be part of our rural and distance program.
Larger cities like L.A.?
L.A., you know, although I have to say, you know, our regional manager in L.A. is really creative. She has several schools where she has sets of volunteers, and one volunteer will come in just on Monday, and one volunteer will come in just on Tuesday, you know, just so that drive is just a little bit less arduous. But yes, large cities like L.A. or Atlanta or even some schools in New York City will, you know, take us up on our rural and distance program. And for there, you know, again, our school needs to make sure that they have the equipment to have a, you know, web-based conferencing and that sort of thing. And you need headsets for each student, so there's, and webcams. So there's a little additional cost, but we do try and, you know, make that as painless as possible.
And I don't think we've actually mentioned what TEAL stands for. We've said it lots of times, but...
Right. So TEAL stands for Technology, Education, and Literacy in Schools. And actually, we haven't talked about how it started, which is actually a great story. It started 10 years ago, in 2009, so not quite 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago. And our founder, Kevin Wang, he actually had a degree in education. He wasn't using it, but he's also a computer science. He was also a programmer at Microsoft. And he was at a party talking to people, as some people do, and they said, oh, we'd love to teach Java at our high school, but we have no way to do it. And he said, well, make it first hour and I'll come and teach it. And so he came in and he taught at first hour, and then he showed up at work. And again, you know, he was fashionably late and it was perfectly fine. And he really loved it. And then that school talked to other schools and said, oh, well, can you bring in volunteers? And so then he started cajoling his friends, saying, hey, don't you want to come teach computer science? And of course, then we grew and grew and grew. And so I really love the model, because I think the model starts off with just people in the tech industry who care and they want to give back.
And I know a lot of organizations that they work for have a volunteer scheme. I know the place where I work has a scheme where you can log your volunteer hours, and they will actually do charitable contributions for that.
Yes.
And so many big organizations like to report and say, we have done this and we have given back this to the community. And it is all of their employees that are encouraged to go and volunteer. Some companies even actually have a time code for volunteering and allow people up to a certain number of hours per month. I know that when I was at HP, I think they gave like 2 hours a month for people to volunteer that they could just put on the time card.
Exactly. There's a lot of great organizations that you know, will do that, where they actually, you know, log your hours, and then of course you can give back to schools. And our schools have used that to fund additional equipment, or, you know, whatever things that they, you know, professional development for their teachers or whatever they might need. And then of course that also gives you it's a lot easier sell if you're in an organization where you say, you know, I'm going to be here, I'm going to be at school, you know, in the mornings, I will be at work by 9:30, you know, on Mondays and Wednesdays. Is that going to be a problem? If you're in that culture where giving back is expected and important, then of course it's a lot easier to go to your supervisor and say that.
And I find that a lot of organizations are trying to embrace that and make a cultural shift towards that, partly because so many studies are saying that millennials, who are going to be half of the workforce soon, if they aren't already, tend to be driven by the need to be contributing to society and actually making a change for the better.
That definitely makes sense. So, but I think it's not just millennials. We have people of all ages who have stepped up and volunteered with TEALS, and not only with TEALS. I mean, a lot of people do a lot of great things, and that's always great, obviously wonderful to see. You know, I encourage everybody to find their passion. And where do you want to volunteer, and what do you want to do to make a difference?
And as part of that making a difference, I'm sure you have teachers that did computer science and maybe did it back in the 80s or something, and they learned Fortran or COBOL or something old like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I was intrigued by the Fortran language especially.
Oh, was that because you thought it was Fortran's people?
I'm know, you used that joke earlier, and I still haven't thought of a snappy comeback, so we'll just move on.
So would some teachers like that be a good place for them to reach out to you so they could have someone help with the more modern languages and enable them to upskill fairly quickly in teaching more modern computer science?
Definitely. I mean, you know, in my background, I actually haven't, you know, I haven't done programming since, you know, grad school. And so, you know, definitely brushing up on those skills is always important, and having a having someone in the industry to help you makes a difference. But we look for energetic teachers. We look for the teacher that every kid wants to be in that classroom with. You know, you always want to take a teacher. You always want to take a class with so-and-so because so-and-so is so fun and energetic. Those are the teachers we're looking for, because we really believe that anyone can learn computer science. It's not like it's this crazy thing that only the smartest savants can do, and that you have to be on the autistic spectrum if you're ever going to succeed in computer science. Everybody can learn computer science, and so the teachers that we look for are those teachers that everybody wants to take a course from, because those are the ones that are going to draw students, and they're going to draw students from a variety of backgrounds, which is incredibly important to us.
Do you have any specific items other than your general principles course to help draw in minority students?
All of our courses are based on the background that we take a look in terms of, you know, what the culture is and what the background is, and so that we try not to have anything that we have tried to have stuff that's appealing to every race and background and gender. But computer science principles course really was designed specifically to bring more women and minorities into computer science. Our introduction course does that also, I think. You know, we haven't tested it, but I think that it's one of those it's one of those curriculums where it's fun, it's interesting, it's inviting. Students can have fun with it, and they can learn rigorous computer science enough that can take them way further than I think that they can just without computer science. You know, that computational thinking is something that it is so hard to teach, but computer science does. And every single person growing up is going to need to use that in some way, shape, or form.
I know when I was teaching science, you could teach a lot of the facts, but trying to teach the scientific thinking, the fact that you might have an idea about something, but is that an idea testable? And how do you come up with the hypothesis? How do you test the hypothesis? Those are the really hard concepts to get across. You can teach people that plants photosynthesize and that they're full of green stuff called chlorophyll. That's really easy.
Right.
So can you give us a little dabble into how you try and help people think computationally?
Sure. You know, our lessons are always designed to be kind of active lab based, and so we always tell our volunteers that you don't want to be teaching more than 15% of the time during an entire class, and so that is your lecture time, and that we always ask that everything that you do is relevant to your students. We ask our volunteers and our classroom teachers to do a survey of students' interests and abilities before the semester starts, so that you know, if you have a lot of karaoke fans, that you can bring in, you know, the latest music and have that available to your students. But all of our time, or most of our classroom time, is spent doing labs. And so we have, you know, problems that you are asked to solve. And those little problems, the idea would be is as you go through and you try and do step one over here and you realize it doesn't work, and then you try step two over here, that's how we build that computational feeling. It's really by doing. And there's not really a better way to teach it, unfortunately, in my experience.
How do you help with the fact that a lot of people are afraid of failure? So that's step one, you find out it didn't work, so you have to do a step two. Mm-hmm. How do you stop people from being discouraged and just wanting to give up when they fail the first time?
You're right. The fear of failure is great. Is strong, especially, you know, it's actually gender specific. You know, when I remember hearing a study about, you know, a girl gets a B in class and she thinks she's doing horribly, but a boy gets a D and he's like, hey, I passed, you know, problem solved, yay. So it definitely is gender specific. One of the things that we try and impart upon our volunteers to teach is that when you do fail, your brain is growing. and that your brain is learning something new. And so we actually, I mean, part of our summer curriculum with teaching our volunteers is actually talking about how you can embrace failure and how you can talk about it and how when you make a mistake, how you discuss it and highlight it and point out that it's not the end of the world. But yes, definitely, you need to make sure that failure is not considered the end, but considered just the next step.
Sorry, I thought my wife wanted to say something, but she didn't. So that was my failure there.
Well, that's the only time I can ever get a word in edgewise is when I have no word to give.
Oh, word. Sorry, that's a really old reference. I shouldn't do that. So we've got maybe 5 minutes left, depending on how long our final Christmas song is. So if you could possibly like sum up your program and reach out to volunteers, what would you want to say to volunteers or to schools to let them know that you're the right place for them to spend their time and to get involved with?
Definitely. So TEALS, and our website is www.tealsk12.org. That is www.tealsk12.org. We provide a variety of students, but our goal is to bring rigorous computer science in every high school. And so the way that we do that is we bring industry volunteers into the classroom to help teach computer science. So if you think you are a school that would like to build or grow your computer science program, we would love to help and see if TEALS is right for you. And if you are a person who has some time to give and would like to give back, especially in the spring, please check our website when our applications usually are open around March. And we are looking for strong, passionate people who understand computer science, who are willing to be in the willing to work with high school students, who aren't afraid of failing and would love to spend some time growing the next generation of computer scientists.
And you've said lots of times industry experience. Out of the hundreds of volunteers you must have dealt with, what industries have you actually had people represented from?
Nationally we're from about 500 different companies. In Kansas City, most of our volunteers are from Cerner, and you know, they are your traditional volunteers,
healthcare.
Developers. In St. Louis, one of my number one volunteers sources is from Riot Games, who does League of Legends. You know, over in Wichita, my number one source of volunteers is stay-at-home moms.
Wow.
It really just depends on the area. We have volunteers from all sorts of sources in industry. I mentioned I have someone who does robotics. But if you understand computer science, if you understand languages, if you like students, then we can definitely see if there's a fit for you. I mean, you know, I'd rather you come and talk to us before we can say that, oh, you don't have enough, you don't have the skills. But we do try and place people that have skills that are at least as great as our classroom teachers.
When you said Wichita, I was expecting you to say aerospace. And then you said stay-at-home moms and really surprised me there.
Yeah, well, and one of them is a stay-at-home mom who's in grad school, so, but, you know.
Wichita is well known for its stay-at-home mom industry.
Yeah. And we have people from industry also, but still.
Well, stay-at-home mom is not really an industry you can outsource that easily.
No.
So, we have about 1 minute left, so tell everyone the web address again, please.
Definitely. It's www.tealsk12.org.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Alison. We've really enjoyed having you on Every Woman.
And we can also get to their website from our Every Woman Facebook page.
Yes, and from the episode on the kkfi.org
Absolutely.
Page as well, where I will be putting a podcast up later.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you. And thank you to Anthony for co-hosting. He's nodding, which works really well on the radio.
Yeah, I know, right? It's wonderful.
And thank you.
Yeah,
to...
I was going to say.
Yeah, if he's going to keep doing things like that, I'm going to have to start live streaming this on Facebook so people can at least see the laconic nod. And thank you to Una for engineering today.
Oh, yeah, I've just run myself ragged sitting here working the board and everything. But I've been listening. It's been a really fascinating talk, and I wish that when I was a young lady that I'd had opportunities available to me like this program. So, but I'm old, so there you go.
That's the number one thing I hear from potential volunteers.
So if you're interested in giving people opportunities that you missed, then perhaps you could reach out to Alison. And other than that, please stay tuned for the next show, Urban Connections with Donna Wolf, followed by Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.